Hello, and welcome to the Voices of CRM podcast for February. I'm Barney Beal, news director with CertCRM.com. Today, we're talking with Christopher Carfi, the co-founder of Serato Incorporated, a social networking company that helps firms connect with their customers via both software and services. He's also the author of the Social Customer Manifesto, a blog that riffs on marketing, the customer experience, and Web 2.0, and a blog that incidentally won an award for Best CRM Blog in 2005 from CertCRM.com. So, Chris, thanks for joining us.
Happily.
Maybe you could just kind of start us out by giving our listeners a quick background on yourself.
Sure. My name is Christopher Carfi. I am the CEO of Serato, and what Serato focuses on is looking at different ways that customers and vendors can work more closely together, and spans the spectrum of a number of services from things like competitive intelligence and win-loss analysis all the way up through how different social media such as social networking and blogs and such can be used to connect up a little bit more effectively between customers and their vendors. And I also blog over at socialcustomer.com.
Yeah, I'm a regular reader.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And anybody out there who's listening, definitely invite you to come check it out as well and give feedback.
So one of the things you've been active lately with is VRM. Can you tell us a bit about what that is and how it's being received?
Sure. Happy to. So VRM is a project that's based out of the Berkman Center out at Harvard. And it was started about a year, a little bit more ago, by Doc Searles, who is one of the four authors on a book called The Qutrain Manifesto that has gotten a lot of reading over the last 7 or 8 years. And really, we've been thinking about VRM as the reciprocal of CRM. So what are the things that are needed for buyers, customers and vendors to really build mutually beneficial relationships? And so if we look at the traditional pillars of CRM, we've got things like marketing and sales and support. And so if we look at all three of those things from the customer side, start thinking about things like instead of marketing at a customer and making market a verb as opposed to the noun that it actually is, if you look at that from the customer side, it's really about search. How do I, how do I find the particular things that I am looking for? And instead of selling, it's more about how do I shop or how do I buy things? And instead of thinking about how do I support a customer, it's more along the lines of how do I get help for the types of things that I might have already purchased. And really, it's ultimately going to be about letting all of us as customers have the tools to manage vendors that that vendors have today in managing customer information. Because I think in a lot of cases, the initial goal of CRM as a set of processes and processes and strategies that are supported by technology to better enable interactions with customers, I think a lot of that has gotten lost in the automation, and a lot of that has been lost. And as a result, in a lot of cases, the customer is not really the one who's getting the benefit out of CRM systems. And so what we're trying to do is turn that on its head a little bit. And it really has some interesting implications for VRM because it affects how marketing is going to occur from the vendor side as well as support and sales, but also has a lot of intersection with a lot of emerging areas such as online identity, because if I am a customer, how I am represented online right now, when we go to most websites, our email address is really sort of the root of our online identity, and there are a lot of interesting projects going on out there that are looking at different and, in some cases, better ways to manage that. If we look at kind of the goals of what are perceived as where we want to take VRM, there are a handful of goals. First is obviously really try to come up with a crisp definition of what it is, since it is a very nascent project.
How old is it?
It's only about a year old at this point, and it's, as I mentioned before, it is being driven out of the Berkman Center at Harvard, and there's sort of a loose but expanding confederation of folks who are contributing time to push it forward. And as part of that, some of the efforts are around developing or finding where existing technical standards or process standards might already be in place that can help with this idea of turning things around from the customer's point of view, driving usage of these types of ideas, and ultimately perhaps even create and oversee a compliance program so that way we don't have some of the issues where, you know, if VRM as a concept and as a term really starts to take off, we won't have the case where there are a lot of folks coming out and saying, oh, you know, we are VRM compliant or we deliver VRM, and if it hasn't been clearly defined and there is no rigorous way of saying whether something is VRM or not, we might get a lot of confusion in the marketplace. And so that's kind of the set of the goals and such. And then, you know, the types of initiatives that fall out of that are things like personal health records or personal knowledge banks. You know, what if you could have a place where you stored all of your interactions across all the different vendors that you've ever worked with? So, you know, your searches, your purchases, all of your support history, instead of having to go to every vendor's individual silo for each of those things, what if you had a, you know, either a place on the web or a device or some sort of personal repository where you have access to all of those types of things?
So, and this is really directed at the end-level customer?
It can be. It works both in the B2C form as well as the B2B form as well, because if you do have a larger organization within there, you may have cases where those organizations need to interact with multiple vendors, of course, as well. And so I think it ultimately is going to span both the business-to-consumer side as well as B2B.
And is there an existing model out there that you could compare this to?
Well, there are a lot of different bits and pieces. And again, you know, really taking the big step back, we really need to think about all of the different areas of figuring out what I might be interested in interacting with a vendor about, actually shopping or interacting with that vendor, and then getting support or help for things on the back end. If we look within that broader framework, a couple of the tidbits might be things like a site such as LendingTree, for example, where I can go out and create, almost think of it as a personal RFP for loan services, mm-hmm. where I might give information about myself. You know, here's what I'm looking for. Here's the term. Here's the rate. Here's some background maybe on my FICO score and things of that nature. And different vendors might then take that, put together their best package, and come back to me. And so that's an example of one place. And that would, for example, just touch on the sales/buy part of that overall model. We're also starting to see things like what Microsoft and Google are doing with personal health records. Doug Searles, who I mentioned before, tells a great anecdote about, you know, anytime anyone goes to the doctor, in a lot of ways they're sort of putting their life in their own hands, because if you go in, you get that 15-page form that you need to fill out. If you forget a condition you have, or misspell something, or forget a particular medication you might be on, the implications of getting any of that information about yourself is, if you get any of that wrong, it could have significantly mm-hmm. negative effects. And so if there were better ways that we could manage our own information in that sphere in a secure and private manner, that would be a place where we might be able to get some significant benefits as well.
And so what's the level of reception to it at this point? I mean, is this mostly academics and some forward thinkers at this point?
It's very, like I said, it's still very nascent, but it's a completely open type of forum. Anyone can go to projectvrm.org and see what has been done so far. And, you know, the reception has been good from forward thinkers and, you know, some academics, and as well number of early conversations with larger organizations that seem to really get it. I don't have the list right in front of me, but there was a set of VRM sessions that were done at the most recent Internet Identity Workshop out here on the West Coast a couple of weeks or months ago. And most of the sessions, you know, had anywhere from, you know, 6 to 20 or 25 folks in there, and that spanned everyone from independents to big organizations like BT. And so, you know, the interest is definitely out there, and now the hard work starts of really pulling all these things together.
Great. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
I want to move on a little bit. I know you just were at a workshop called the Customer Service is the New Marketing. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what went on there and what you came away from it with yourself.
Yeah, it was a very very interesting session. I was out here in San Francisco yesterday, and you know, most notably it was up at the Presidio, and it was the first sunny day we've had in, like, I think actually it's only about 3 weeks, but it seems like it's been much, much longer. And so you know, a lot of smiling faces and folks walking around outside, which was good. The presentations and the interaction were really outstanding. The main part of the day had a number of different presentations, for example, from the CEO of Zappos, the online shoe company, Geek Squad, a number of other folks as well. And really the overarching idea was that, you know, this idea of taking care of customers and connecting with customers, and in many cases allowing customers of an organization to connect directly with each other, is a significant emerging trend that we really need to be focusing on. And that was really, I think, the overarching theme. Additionally, there were a lot of really insightful nuggets from, for example, Robert Stevens, I believe is his name, the head of Geek Squad, which is part of Best Buy, I think now. He was talking about, you know, some of the tactics and some of the ways that they have interacted with customers over the history of that organization, and just really a lot of really interesting viewpoints on how doing remarkable things can both get the attention of, as well as engender an organization to its customers. And, you know, he talked through a lot of different techniques that they've used, you know, from the vehicles that they drive around that are, you know, very noticeable,
right,
down to, you know, really minute details, like all of, I get, you know, apparently all of their uniforms, they've got the same shirts and pants and shoes and things like that, and they actually commission the shoes out so that when they step, actually the heels on the shoes have a Geek Squad logo in there. So if you step in a puddle or something like that, you're leaving little,
really?
You know, little footprints of branding around, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, just one of those things where if you think of something that is unique, it's remarkable, and folks, you know, like us, will talk about it.
Right.
But also, it's one of those things that is, you know, if you're the creative one who comes up with it, you get a distinct advantage, because anybody else who tries to do the exact same tactic will be seen as a copycat. So it's, you know, this idea of creativity as a strategic advantage in a way that you can really engender yourself to customers, I thought was a very interesting set of messages.
Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to CRM and the social customer, from what I've seen and with our readership, I think people are certainly beginning to take an interest in some of the cool things that are going on. Particularly with, you know, groups like Geek Squad, but are still struggling a bit with how to fit it into their own business, particularly when it comes to business-to-business companies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some advice? How do you engage a community around something like engine parts, or how much interest will there be in a blog about lighting fixtures? Where do those kind of companies get started?
Well, I think, it really comes down to, first off, a matter of perspective. So if you are thinking about something like, you know, engine parts or lighting fixtures, or, you know, all of these things that surround us that are, you know, in some cases part of the infrastructure, there are still significant communities out there of these, you know, of individuals who are working in those industries, and finding ways to connect with them, be it, you know, through blogs or through social networks, is something that organizations should be thinking about for a number of different reasons. One, if an organization is out there and consistently talking about what's going on, both, you know, in the industry as well as within their organization, when somebody comes in who's looking for information about that industry or particular, you know, class of product, they're going to be more likely to find them just from a pure search engine point of view. But also, those are ways, blogging and social networking are ways for organizations to really differentiate themselves, because if a prospective customer comes in, if they are only seeing product information, you know, speeds and feeds and specs and things like that, there's really very, very little differentiation in many cases across the different competitors. And it gets down to, you know, in my opinion, that inner personal connection between the individual. So if you can find somebody who's in your industry who also might share some of the types of more human affinity. So, you know, if this person is writing about, you know, engine parts or something like that, but you find out, you know, he grew up in Chicago, lives on the West Coast now, you know, reads Neal Stephenson and snowboards, you might be more likely to interact with that person if any of those things match up with your interests.
Right.
You know, another interesting example, a couple of years ago, there was a company called Bigha, B-I-G-H-A. At the time, they were doing a lot of blogging and just sort of a, here's what's going on in our company. They're sort of an outdoor outfitter of different types of gear, either, you know, biking gear or you know, things like laser pointers that you might use for astronomy or things like that. And one of their laser pointers was used in a case a couple of years ago that you might have seen where somebody out in New Jersey was shining a laser at jet planes that were landing. And this was, you know, just post 9/11. And so there were folks getting all freaked out about it. And they did a phenomenal job with their blog defusing all of this misinformation that was starting to come up about their company, about what they were doing. And even when cases like a journalist would write something about their organization that was wrong, they would just refute it pretty much in real time on the blog. And it's an interesting way that since they already had the infrastructure and the process and the mindset in place, to have this very natural set of conversations when they were unexpectedly brought in the middle of this firestorm, they were able to really be part of the conversation and not be manipulated or misrepresented. So I think, you know, in addition to the customer interactions through the, you know, the sales process or the buying process, it also gives a nice platform for individuals within organizations to really tell it like it is in the cases like we saw with Bigha.
Yeah, and that makes a great deal of sense. It strikes me as something that's particularly difficult for people to quantify, especially as, you know, we're facing the possibility of an economic downturn and people maybe trying to justify funding a blogging initiative to their boss. I mean, how do you tell them, well, it's worth it because of this?
It's interesting. I mean, you know, like a lot of different types of communication expenses, it may or may not be possible to directly draw the correlation between this particular activity and this particular line on the balance sheet, but you still might be able to have quantifiable metrics in all of these different types of social media. And, you know, one of the things that we counsel our clients on is to have some sort of quantifiable way of tracking these things, and it can be something as simple as, you know, number of logins to the website, or number of posts, you know, number of members in a network. Looking at things like, if you're looking at a large online community, you'll normally see a breakdown between the number of folks who are actively posting versus commenting on other posts versus just sort of observing what's going on and being part of that huge silent majority that we typically see in both online and offline communities. And so tracking those different types of metrics, being able to look at the overall sort of subjective quality of information that is being posted. So if you know, if any of these types of activities have ways of rating individual pieces of information that are out there, you know, be they posts or reviews or what have you, those are types of things. So coming up with that list of quantifiable metrics and then tracking them over time, and, you know, what the particular metrics are going to be for a particular organization, obviously going to be very situation dependent.
Right. Well, Chris, that's been great. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to, and thank you again for the invitation.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please tune in next month for the next installment of our Voices of CRM podcast, when we talk with another luminary in the CRM market and get their take on recent developments. And please continue to turn to searchcrm.com for all your CRM information needs. Thanks.